Are you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Jesse Lakes, who is the CEO of GeniusLink. If you're not familiar with GeniusLink, Jesse dives into it in the podcast, but it's essentially an affiliate marketing software. It allows you to give your customers on the website multiple options for their to buy their affiliate products. So instead of just linking to Amazon, you can link to Walmart, Target, all that kind of stuff, and have multiple options for the user to be able to essentially do their own price research as well. So the whole idea is to improve affiliate conversions and click-through rates, which they have some case studies on, which he covers in the podcast as well. But we dive into a whole range of things around affiliate marketing, the Amazon Associates Program, things that you shouldn't do to make sure you don't get kicked out, and all sorts of things there. And if GeniusLink sounds interesting to you and you want to try it, go down in the description. There's a link there. Sign up. And if you email their support after signing up and you send them your favorite Niche Website Builders episode, they'll give you a 2-month free trial. So normally it's a 14-day free trial. They'll give you 2 months if you just email support and do that. So that's easy as, since you all listen to every episode of the Niche Website Builders podcast, you must have hundreds of favorites. So that's easy. But we also dive into some other topics as well around Amazon KDP. So Kindle books, publishing books, all that kind of stuff. So it's a jam-packed episode, and sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show, and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right. Welcome to the Niche Website Builders podcast. Today, we have Jesse Lakes. Welcome, Jesse.
How's it going? So awesome to be here.
No, thank you for coming on. You are highly recommended, as I was mentioning before, the affiliate marketing guru. Coming in here. So we're hopefully going to learn a lot today on all things, specifically Amazon affiliate marketing too. But do you want to maybe give a brief background about yourself, Jesse, and kind of what you're up to?
Sure. Yeah, I would call myself a 20-year student. Been dabbling with affiliate marketing for quite some time now. Started off hating it. Was so bummed that my projections on this business plan I built during business school and college, we're going to make me a millionaire by the time I graduated. It was all based off of ads, and of course the dot-com crash just ruined that. So affiliate marketing was the only thing left for me to use to kind of leverage the site I was working. But first initial impressions were not too great with affiliate marketing. We kind of have dabbled off and on for a number of years, done a number of web projects. But I think what really brought me into really loving affiliate marketing was started building some websites that took soundtracks from extreme sports films and linking up with iTunes and Amazon. And that was kind of the first project where I saw some nice hockey stick growth in traffic, but the revenue was a little flat, and I'll tell you the rest of the story here in a minute. But that was kind of the beginning of the love for affiliate marketing, when I realized I can help people get the music that they love, but also make a nice coin off that as well. And that's the beginning of a longer story of where I am today, but I'll take a breath there.
No, that's perfect. That just goes straight into it. Dive into that first early project. How did that end up going? Did you sell it, or did it fizzle out? What happened there?
Yeah, so it led to many good things. Unfortunately, it sat on a server that I neglected and lost the domain, and I got the domain back and lost the site, etc. So don't forget about your projects when you get distracted. But the kind of short version of that story is realizing the hockey stick growth and traffic was awesome. The revenue being flat was frustrating. My aha moment was I realized that skiing, snowboarding, and surfing and music are international loves. Everyone around the world seems to enjoy, some of that. So that traffic growth was because my site had really picked up internationally. So that was the aha moment. The oh no moment came shortly afterwards when I realized that because I was linking to digital products and digital rights management was a hot topic of that item. I was essentially serving up broken links for everyone that was international. Reason my revenue was really flat was because that was only the US traffic that was monetizing because I'm only putting a US iTunes link and Amazon.com link. So, okay, now I see this bigger picture. So call up my best friend at that point. He was my former roommate in college. He was an engineer at Microsoft at this point, and just asked him, can we build a smart link? Can we figure this out? And classic engineer says, well, yeah, I can build anything. but you need to write me the requirements doc. Tell me how to build it. So I go, okay, we'll figure that out. So I deep dove for the next 6-8 months, figuring out how the iTunes affiliate program in particular worked. It was the one that was yielding me more revenue. iTunes was obviously more ubiquitous with music. And this is 2008, 2009. So got him the information he needed for, to start working on the project. And, also got a nudge from another friend to say that just encouraged me to write a book. I was doing this endless summer thing at that point. I was spending my summers in Colorado and winters in Costa Rica, and had decided not to go to Costa Rica that year because of met a girl who's now my co-founder, but that's another story. We'll get there. I ended up writing this book about the iTunes affiliate program based off of all my research. So my buddy's building me a solution for my websites. I'm working on this book. Yeah, I'm getting a lot of snowboarding in, waiting for the rafting season to start. It was a good year. But just as I kind of finished up that book, Mastering the iTunes Affiliate Program, sent it off to some people I found on LinkedIn, that seemed associated with Apple's program, and was excited. I'd always been a big fan of Apple. again, the Safari comment earlier. I had drank the Kool-Aid and just excited. I was proud of the work and research I'd done. And of course, classic Apple corporate, they sent me back a cease and desist and threatened to sue me if I published the book. So that was exactly, that was my expression to the T. So hopped on the phone with this woman shortly after that. And, first 30 seconds are very civil and polite. The next 45 minutes, she just screamed at me. Who the F was I to be publishing all these lies? How could I know anything about this? They'd never heard of me. There was no way they could let me publish it. I was going to ruin the program. I was going to ruin her life, so forth and so on. So we ultimately agreed that, you, Apple, can review my book. I will wait to publish it until you review it, and we'll take it from there. So a couple weeks later, the story was radically different. 160 pages, 60,000 words. I had three pretty trivial mistakes that I fixed up and started publishing. But they also asked me to come work for them, to trade in my flip-flops for a cubicle and a commute in Cupertino. And I, of course, said, yeah. Left Colorado, moved to Cupertino, California, and started a job at Apple as a global program manager for the iTunes affiliate program, and spent couple of years. Yeah, it was a big change.
Interesting move.
Yeah, going from as a raft guide, I was a very happy raft guide, but I was living below the poverty level with a smile on my face, and going to Silicon Valley and getting a six figure job was a radical shift for me, but it was amazing. Again, I had the amazing people I worked with as a raft guide, huge hearts, but it was awesome to start working with people with huge hearts and a good head on their shoulders as well, just working with incredibly brilliant people. And honestly, over the next couple of years, we made the majority of that book obsolete, fixed a lot of the problems, put a lot of documentation out, just really kind of cleaned house and made the affiliate program better, did some pretty amazing things. But one thing we didn't focus on, in fact, kind of the opposite, was this whole problem we call now geofragmentation, the whole idea that when you have a global brand that needs to support people around the world, often the easiest way to do that is to build different storefronts in different parts of the country where you can have localized language, localized currency. For DRM, you have the rights to sell it. If it's a physical product, you have the shipping, easy availability, etc. But we, during my time at Apple, We tripled the size of the affiliate program, and we added a zero to the total revenue flowing through it. But as we tripled it, tripled the footprint, we were making that kind of problem more challenging. There was more storefronts, which meant more affiliate programs, which meant more affiliate networks. And again, you know, the US program only worked for the US store, and a US iTunes link only worked for the US store. You get an error message often when you got a click from UK or Australia, etc. So it was kind of this crazy realization that this problem, they fully knew what I had done, and there was a problem, but that was the growth mandate. And I was seeing the same thing at Amazon as well. So after a couple awesome years at Apple, just realized that this problem's only going to get worse. And I had already built out a solution for it. I think it was time, you know, it was really feeling it was time to go to market with it. So a couple glorious years in the Bay Area, called it good, and started focusing on GeoRiot, which is the predecessor to GeniusLink, the company okay. that I lead the team on now. So first it was the iTunes ecosystem, got that to a pretty good spot. And then the Amazon ecosystem, did some pretty amazing things with that. And then it's been a crazy journey. It's what, 11 years since we started. So it's been a journey.
Oh, wow. That's been a while. Do you want to maybe walk through the process of how you ended up creating GeniusLink then? Obviously, it was off the back of the things you did there with the Apple affiliate program. That was kind of like the backbone of the software.
The backbone of the software is honestly what I had my engineering roommate, the Microsoft guy, build before I actually wrote the book. Or, you know, that was the requirement stock that I initially wrote up. So we had the working prototype well before I started with Apple. Apple experience just let me see affiliate marketing from the other side as a program manager, and realize some of the nuances behind international expansion and some of the challenges associated with keeping it simpler or bringing it together, and how it is much faster to just roll out individual, you know, cookie cutter storefronts, cookie cutter affiliate programs, etc. So it, yeah, that technology first, and then just the experience that let me see that this is a legit problem, and this is probably not a problem that's going to go away super quickly. Initially I thought it was like, you know, 5 years max, you know, everyone's going to see this. We're going to build some software. Everyone's going to see it's a problem they should be solving in-house, and they're going to fix it. But it turns out it's actually a lot of affiliate programs continue to operate that way. I had a call with a major retailer this morning, and we were talking specifically about that. And I asked them, well, you know, we can build a solution. And they kind of pondered on it. It's like, you know, it's pretty broken right now. We'll think about that. And it's just, well, you know, this brand has been around for years and years. It's been an e-commerce player for quite some time, and it's just still something they know of, but they're not actively trying to solve it. So anyway, it's a unique problem that we enjoy geeking out on.
Yeah. Do you want to maybe dive into, maybe for anyone who hasn't heard of GeniusLink before, kind of what the software does?
Yeah. So we're a bit of a two-trick pony now, you know. So the first trick was really just that localization, right? You give us a single iTunes link that's, you know, geo-specific, and we'll turn that into a link that works worldwide. So we'll solve kind of that user experience aspect to ensure that someone from a foreign country, it goes to the right song or album or movie or pair of shoes in a storefront that can sell to them. And second is the monetization piece, right? There's affiliate marketing is a great way, obviously, to earn affiliate revenue from product recommendations. Well, again, different storefronts, different programs have different tracking IDs that need to be added to that link. So the core piece of GeniusLink was just ensuring that, you know, you give us a link to tell us what product, we'll then give you a link that works worldwide to recommend that product to an international audience and allow you to monetize on that. So that was the original genesis. There was, you know, those are kind of two of the five different value props. There's a handful of other things we kind of do along the side. But that's evolved into this second piece now, which kind of works hand in hand. And that's that focusing on a single affiliate program, a single retailer, is very easy to get started with and definitely the recommended way to go. You know, if you're just getting into affiliate marketing, you know, Amazon's affiliate program is a great place to start. But it's not a great place to stay. It can be a cornerstone of your strategy, but in the end, you should probably start using some of these other retailers that recommend that same product. So GeniusLink's second kind of aspect is this whole concept of multi-retailer. And it's what you see when you look at, you know, Wirecutter or CNET or some of these big major affiliate publishers. Well, they'll recommend a product and there'll be, you know, 2, 3, 5 additional retailers selling that exact same product. So we have a turnkey solution, so our clients can build essentially that multi-retailer solution. We call it a choice page, and we've seen some pretty cool success. You know, paying attention internationally, optimizing your conversion rate. Yeah, we're making some good progress to helping helping our clients level up and go from associates to affiliates and put some money in their pockets.
Have you tested having just say the one Amazon link versus giving buyers a choice? Does that make actually a really big difference?
Yes. There are some nuances here. So take this all with a grain of salt. We did a huge test not too long ago. I guess it's been a year or two ago now, where we had exactly that. We set up an A/B test where 50% of the traffic went directly to Amazon. The other 50% went to a choice page. And across 10 different YouTubers, influencers, across, I think we did about 1 million clicks all said and done. We found that on average, the choice page led to a 2.2 to a 2.4x increase in conversion rate and commissions. So more than double when you went with multiple retailers. And if you think about it, it makes a little bit of sense, right? Amazon's huge, right? Amazon has what, 40 some odd percent US e-commerce market share. That's massive. The next largest is Walmart at 8, so 5 times larger than Walmart. But still at 40%, that means that 3 out of every 5 sales still happen outside of Amazon. Mm. So if you're only linking to Amazon, which again is the largest single retailer, you're missing out on all those other options. So by including multiple different retailers, you're providing people that don't buy at Amazon an easy way to click your affiliate link and move forward. The other kind of psychological thing that we found too is that when you encourage people to do their research, their due diligence before they buy, it can help build momentum. So if you give them 3 different buttons or 5 different buttons, said, you know, find the best price below, they may click on each of those buttons. They may find that Amazon, you know, has it in stock and has it for a low price, but, you know, B&H Photo Video actually has it cheaper and can ship sooner, or, you know, they have it at Best Buy. And well, it turns out Best Buy has curbside pickup and Best Buy is only 3 blocks away. You can get it today. So by kind of taking that whole buying experience and kind of consolidating it, make it easy for them, you're keeping people from jumping over to, you know, Google Shopping or jump to another site to continue to find a better deal or coupon, whatever it may be. So it's, just kind of consolidating and so far it's been working out. So 2.2 to 2.4x, that test was with a bunch of YouTubers, and that was typically higher priced equipment, camera gear, etc. We haven't seen a conclusive test yet on small consumer goods, and I don't know if choice pages are the best way to sell some soap or some, you know, consumer staple good that, you know, it doesn't matter that much if there's a 10 cent difference in price or whatever it may be. It's easiest, honestly, maybe just to go to Amazon and add it to your cart, or, you know, go to Target and add it to your cart. Don't have conclusive data there. The third piece of this, and I'll take a breath here in a second.
Keep going.
We actually ran across one of our clients at a pretty cool test using choice pages and Genius Link inside of his site. And I might butcher this here, but I believe it was a 44% lift in revenue. So again, not the, you know, more than double, but still, you know, solid double digit lift as well. And again, you know, the choice pages work really well from social media. They work well on websites as well, but it's not as clean of an experience because it is an extra click to then pull it up, where again, seeing that and the others, you kind of see those stacked inside the content. So short answer, yes, we have seen a lift. I should have started with that. Sorry.
No, it's good. I'm just thinking now, I'm thinking of like maybe an example on my own site where maybe giving a choice page wouldn't be advantageous. And I don't know if you've run into this at all. Maybe, for example, I'm an affiliate for a product that's sold through their own Shopify store, and you get, I don't know, let's just say 10 to 15% commissions on a high ticket product. And you say you give them a choice page to Amazon where you only get 3% commissions on the same product. Now, is that something that you've come across that or tested at all? Because I can imagine if people start buying from Amazon instead of onto the actual one where you're getting 10, 15% commissions, you're going to see a big drop in revenue doing something like that.
Yeah, no, thank you for bringing that. That's a really good question. So it is better to get some commission for a sale than a large commission for no sale. So you may get, you know, 10 or 15% from the Shopify site, but if they abandon and jump over and buy from Amazon, because they buy everything from Amazon, you're not going to get anything from that sale. So better to get, you know, 2, 3, 4% from that Amazon sale than the 10 to 15. We have found that there is, you know, 3 is a magic number, and there seems to be a good combination of having Amazon, the brand that's selling the product, linking to their e-commerce store, and then one other option, you know, kind of, I don't want to say a red herring, but one other one. So you buy direct from the brand, which often there's a lot more trust associated with that. You know, Amazon has a little bit of a history of you know, some knockoff goods, et cetera. I mean, you know, I have yet to come across one of those, but it's in the news more often than Amazon probably would like about the counterfeited goods, whatever. So Amazon, the brand, and then, you know, Walmart or Target or, you know, someone else that, you know, is competitive, but is not often, you know, thought of as the first place to go to buy online. So that kind of combination of retailers seems to do well. I don't have any data to back that up, but from talking to our clients, there seems to be some value there. So yeah, at the end of the day, I'd rather get 1% or 2% of a sale than 15% of no sale.
Not fair enough. But I guess the other question is on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you have Amazon One Link, so they've tried to solve the problem. But what's the difference then between, say, using Genius Link versus Amazon One Link?
I have a story I'm not allowed to tell due to an NDA. But Genius Link is the premium version of that. One might argue that One Link was modeled after Genius Link. So One Link is a fine place to start, and I've got a blog post that walks through. But at the end of the day, if Amazon commissions are important to you, you're actually kind of shooting yourself a bit in the foot by just using One Link. One Link, for a class example here, is just around accuracy. Getting someone to the product details page, the PDP page, of the site, is you're going to convert better. You're also, in Europe in particular, going to get a much higher commission rate by sending someone to the product details page. Amazon's commission structure for a bulk of the European storefronts pays you at like 0.5%, 1%, maybe even 1.5% versus, you know, 4, 5, 8, 10 if you go to a search page. By default, One Link lands on a search page more often than it lands on a product details page. So that accuracy and translation is very important. So if you see any decent amount of commission coming from Europe and you're using One Link, you may be in your best interest to try, you know, a premium service. We are not the only one. There are some other people in the space, but so accuracy is key. There's also, we support more countries, support more formats. We know that our translation algorithms, while, you know, we've got many patents and are the best from our experimentation, are not perfect. So we also provide ways to kind of override that. If we're sending to a search result page in the UK, and UK is your, you know, 30% of your traffic, well, we give you this, we call it advanced, where you can very quickly create a rule and override our translation algorithm to narrow that in. And, you know, if you find that, you know, a good chunk of your revenue is coming from one product recommendation, it makes sense to really dial in that link. And same thing, you know, if you get, you know, 10% of your traffic from South Africa, Amazon doesn't have a South Africa storefront, but you know, a retailer that does incredibly well selling that one product in South Africa, well, add that in. Now, One Link is going to work across the world for Amazon, plus in South Africa, it's going to go here. And then, you know, you can kind of build that up exactly how you need to. Costa Rica, you know, it's this retailer, and then, you know, in Argentina, it's this retailer, and, you know, you can make that link just as powerful as you possibly can.
Right. So Amazon One Link doesn't actually send them to the product on the different storefronts. It sends them to a search page.
It will send them to a product. It just doesn't happen as often as we do it. By a decent margin, if I remember correctly. I think we do it twice as often as they do. But yeah, the goal is to send it to a product page, but however they're doing it is not as accurate as the way that we're doing it.
Gotcha.
So knock on wood, from our testing, pretty exhaustive testing, we continue to run circles around with them, and as far as accuracy goes.
Nice. And I know you've written a book on Amazon Associates or Amazon Affiliate Marketing.
It's been a project.
So what does the book go into? Is it more about how to take advantage or best practices for Amazon affiliate marketing?
Yeah. So, I'll tell you the quick backstory. So, last May was, you know, finally feeling like I could start traveling again, went to New York for some meetings and for Affiliate Summit East. It was a great conference, but I came home with COVID. We have two young girls. My wife just threw me, you know, quarantined me in the office and in the guest bedroom until I tested negative. So, the first couple of days felt like crap. The next couple of days, watched a ton of Netflix and played a bunch of video games. After that, I honestly got bored. So as I got bored, you know, caught up my inbox, got some work done, but I had some extra time. So started taking all the different blog posts that I'd written over the last decade and cleaned them up, took the different documentation that I cleaned up, all the conversations we had internally in Slack, and just started cleaning them up and just started kind of putting these pieces back together. Again, you know, the iTunes book, you know, opened some pretty crazy doors and was honestly a good project for me to do. I have this fascination with organizing data. So that was kind of that first iteration of the book, was just kind of taking all these different pieces, cleaning them up, putting them together, you know, updating it with some other information. And then I've been evolving. So this is V1.2 now. So there's been another iteration, just published it, two, 3 weeks ago. So yeah, more and more information coming through. But yeah, it's definitely some best practices. What is Amazon Affiliate Program? How to become an Amazon affiliate? How to stay compliant? The compliant is actually one of the things that's probably, I think, most important, is that, you know, it sucks when you're starting to kick butt with Amazon's affiliate program, then get kicked out and never allowed back in and have, you know, the last 2 months or 3 months of your commissions clawed back. So Amazon's program has a few different nuances that are easy to fall into if you don't remember or if you haven't gone through it. So best practices, going global, advanced tips, and you're wrapping up. So it's a relatively quick read from what I've heard. Try to cover the key pieces of Amazon Affiliate.
Nice. Before I go into those, the actual book marketing and creating a hard copy book. I did one of my very first website. I did an Amazon Kindle book just to kind of test the ropes and get it there. And it's still there. It's just in a completely different niche with, I didn't even put my name on it because I just kind of did it anonymously.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe how are you selling the book, or how are you? Are there best practices on Amazon to sell Kindle books? It's not an empty niche. There's a lot of people selling Kindle books as just part of their marketing tactics and all sorts of. And so, is there a way that you've cut through all the noise there?
So yeah, great question. There's a couple different nuances here, right? So there used to be this hack that was kind of brilliant, where you promote free Kindle books to your audience, and the idea is that at a free price point, and you know, book lovers love books, you get them to click the Amazon affiliate link and go inside the Amazon store. Now that link has been clicked, the cookie is set. Now anything they buy in the next 24 hours, you'll get credit for. So you use the free Kindle book as an entryway to get them into the Amazon store, so that you can take advantage of those halo commissions, anything else they buy in that period. Amazon has put a little bit of a stop on that. Now it's something like, you can't have more than 80% of your book clicks being to a free product or for Kindle eBooks or something, and you have to have less than 20,000. There's some nuances. If you look at the bottom of the associates reporting page, it'll kind of give you a report on where those are at. So that you may have been alluding to that hack where a lot of people were promoting Kindle books to get started, and it was lucrative, right? The Amazon is notorious for those halo commissions where, you know, you go to buy some toilet paper, but end up buying a TV and a toaster as well and getting commissions on all of it. So that's one side of it. The Kindle space in general is pretty crowded. There's a lot of people writing books for good reason. It's honestly a process, but I am not a good writer. There are some good tools and I have some great people that help me out, but it's anyone can write a book, honestly. And it's rewarding, I think, to kind of share some information, share things that you're passionate about and get it out there. But as far as the marketing goes, yeah, there's much better experts than I, you know, espousing the ways to do that. Take that back a second. You're asking how I'm marketing the book. Yeah. I'm honestly, I think I maybe sold a couple dozen copies. I think I've given away 300 or 400 now. I feel like a book is a better business card, right? A business card, you know, you print on thick cardstock and you round the edges or you do something and it helps you stand out. But at the end of the day, you know, you're at a conference or you've met a bunch of people, you have a bunch of business cards that don't really do anything.
Yeah.
By handing out a book, the thought is that, A, I'm helping people, giving them, you know, information that, you know, some of it's been, you know, or all of it's been, you know, pretty thoroughly vetted. And can be helpful for them to rise up. But ultimately, you know, maybe they'll remember me, and maybe I can help them with another problem. You know, maybe Genius Link can help them with a problem. So at the end of the day, I think the book is honestly becoming some of our best marketing material. We still run ads. Yeah, we still, you know, tweet out here and there. But at the end of the day, it's somewhat unique, and it's something our competitors in the space are not doing. So if I can hand out more books and help more people, I mean, I'm a firm believer that the rising tide lifts all ships. So if they learn something along the way and maybe just maybe remember my name or remember Genius Link as part of, you know, an antidote in the book, I'd say that's that marketing's working.
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea, and the idea of publishing into a physical book too is nice. Does Amazon do that for you? Is that something you get them to do, or is it have to go through a different route to do that?
So I'm just learning this myself. So Amazon has this Kindle Direct Publishing, KDP, and they make it really easy. But there's kind of a piece of this. So the first time I published, or the first edition of this, so my iTunes book, I never got past just a cleaned up PDF that sold. With this one, I used KDP. It was a pretty easy process. You kind of said it. The Amazon margins are trash. I make very, very little off of every book sale, which, again, I'm not in it to sell the books. It doesn't really matter. But the gist is I used Google Docs to write it. I used the Google Slides to build some of my art. Had a buddy bust out the cover. And then just using the Apple Preview app, I kind of placed all the pieces where I needed them placed, the white where I needed, et cetera. So I had this PDF, upload the PDF with the cover. Amazon runs it through this tool so you can kind of preview it. As soon as it was good, I hit, submit. That actually turned around pretty fast. My first time, I think it was like 36, maybe 48 hours. It was available for me to order. I could order an author copy. Another day or two later, it actually showed up on the Amazon store. It was available. Okay. So yeah, honestly, pretty quick turnaround. So I was pretty sold on that. It was cheap to publish. It didn't cost me anything really. I was able to buy my author copies, which I, started taking to conferences and handing out. And it was on the Amazon store. So that was, proved, and it let me kind of walk in the shoes of our clients. So round two now coming up, last month, wanted to put out this next edition, had a conference coming up. I remember it being so easy before that I didn't give myself the proper lead time, to get the second edition out, and fought back and forth with the review process. And I'm not actually dealing with humans. This is all the computers there, right? But we just wouldn't submit it, and it kept giving me errors, and the trim size was off, and it was something here, something there. It was taking, 4 or 5 days for them to tell me that it was ready for review, and I'd find another issue. So I actually realized that if you're not in a hurry, Amazon's not bad. If you're going to take this seriously, there's a company called Lulu, L-U-L-U. I'd met them at a conference. They were freaking amazing. They turned it around on a dime. They helped me with some issues. It was just like, it's the difference of having a human involved, right? Yeah. That can listen and wants to help and see you be successful. So my book wasn't actually even available on Amazon until the end of the conference. I had two boxes of books waiting for me like 4 or 5 days before the conference even started, because I'd gone with Lulu. So again, if you're not in a time rush and you just want to play with it, Amazon's KDP. So it's like kdp.amazon.com. Great place to play with. It all kind of works together. It's pretty cool. But if you are starting to take it seriously, I'd seen the value of handing out books at conferences. And I had, Affiliate Summit West coming up. It was important that I had the copies. Lulu just knocked the socks off. It was just an amazing experience. So anyway, long story for your short question.
That's good to know as well for future and for anyone who's looking to publish their own books or Kindle books as well. But are you currently running any of your own affiliate sites?
No. The soundtrack websites were probably the last time that I've personally built a site, and had built a number of them before that. I love the niche play. I had websites about extreme sports, the tricks and tips. That was kind of the first one. Did a lot of stuff in the travel space. Spun up a blog about, restaurant reviews. There was a number of adventures in the space, but since Apple and Genius Link, have not done my own niche site. We do, to be perfectly transparent, have a site called kit.co, which is a place where creators go to share the products that they love. It's kind of like your mixtape for products, very heavily built off of affiliate links, surprise, surprise, and product curation. So, Genius Link is the technology that powers a lot of the stuff on Kit. So I still get to dabble as an affiliate, but as far as, writing content, I was watching the Doug Cunnington's conversation with you in that recent podcast, and it's, huge fan of Doug and what he does. But we are definitely different worlds here. I haven't touched that. Obviously, we get to support, you know, thousands of different niche sites with Genius Link, but I haven't walked in those shoes for a while now.
No, fair enough. What's the plan with Genius Link then in the future? Are you looking to set this up to exit kind of thing, or are you just kind of building it and seeing where it goes?
Excellent question. So in the early days, you know, having spent a little time in Silicon Valley, you know, thought, oh, this is you know, venture backed startup material. We're gonna blow it up. And we've had some great successes, but I really love what I do. I put in a lot of long hours, but you know, for the most part, the team takes Fridays off. We call it Flex Fridays. I've got a couple of young kids. Yeah, my wife's a co-founder. I think I've found that work-life balance. It's not balanced, that work-life compromise, you know, because again, yeah, it ebbs and flows. So I love to build. I like to solve problems. You know, if someone shows up and waves a lot of money in my face, I will happily have a conversation if it makes sense to combine forces to do greater things faster. We're again 11 years in full time. I kind of love what I do. I want to keep solving problems. There's I'll save you the boredom here, but there's kind of four different threads that I'm really key on weaving together. We've got the starts of most of those coming together, but my grand vision is still, I think, another couple of years out, and I need to dive
into that, or is that
sure? No, yeah, happy to. So again, I kind of talked about the two trick pony that Genius Link is, right? We have that localization aspect, making sure that anyone around the world gets a link that works well for them, and then the second piece of that is really around this whole multi-retailer. Think of it as kind of a conversion rate optimization, right? You know, that you can have multiple options to find, you know, the product that you want that from a store that best suits for you. So the first piece is weaving those together, right? So if you get a click from the US, it's going to be these 3 to 5 retailers. You get a click from the UK, it's probably going to be 3 to 5 different retailers. You get Amazon.com, Amazon UK, etc. So we've got both those technologies. We're working on weaving those together. That's an important part. The next piece is around monetization, right? What's the point of recommending a product if you can't earn from it? You know, from a book, you can earn royalties. That's one story. But for most of us as affiliate marketers, we need to make sure that each of those links are monetized. So that click in the UK for 3 to 5 other retailers, that we can still earn from it. But when you take, you know, your top 10 countries and you take 5 different retailers, that's 50 different affiliate programs. Sign up for 50 different affiliate programs is a major pain in the butt. What do you do? So obviously there's, you know, these sub affiliate networks, you know, Sovereign Commerce, Skimlinks are both good solutions. We teamed up and, are integrating with a younger one. It's called Fresh Reach. It's invite only at the moment. So we want to make that monetization piece built into Genius Link. So Amazon doesn't allow, it's a little complicated there, but for all these other retailers, we want to just kind of take care of that for you. If you want to support them directly, you know, that there's that one retail in the UK you make a lot of money from, awesome. Go set up, have a direct connection with them, build that relationship. But for all the, for that mid-body and long tail of all those other different affiliate programs, let us take care of that for you. Let's just, you know, help you out and save some of that problem. So that's 3 of the strands. The 4th strand comes from Kit, what we were talking about just a moment ago, this whole idea of curation. Selling one product is great, but when you can sell someone on 3 or 4 products because that's what you need to solve a problem, that's more powerful. You know, it's don't sell features, sell benefits, right? You know, I use this microphone and this camera and this tripod to do my portrait stuff. And I have this backpack and this lens and whatever when I go shoot nature stuff. And, you know, my rally car has X, Y, and Z because that's how I, whatever it may be. So helping people build a shopping cart instead of sending individual products is kind of that next level up. So taking the monetization, the localization, the multi-retailer, and tie it in with kind of the curation, those are kind of the 4 threads that when come together, I think we've built a pretty amazing tool. And again, we've got all the different pieces in the works. It's just the fun of making it all work perfectly seamless together. So yeah. Anyway, yeah, I got a couple years ahead of me.
That's interesting because I've been meaning to write a post on, so we made a DIY lifting platform in the garage.
Okay.
And we documented it all. So we have the pictures and videos. I was going to write that up. And I was like, okay, we bought the stuff from Home Depot and we bought from Tractor Supply.
Yep.
And some other bits and pieces. And yeah. I think I got rejected from the bloody Home Depot bloody affiliate program. Whatever.
Ping me afterwards. I've got some connections. We'll see what we can do.
Right, sweet. And then I'm like, okay, so if I write this post, I could do a table. And then I'm gonna have all the individual things in there, you know, get this, get this, get this, get this. So what you're saying is you could have with the new Genius Link stuff, you could just have all of that in kind of one button, get everything you need, click here, and it will get from all, or somehow add to cart from all the different retailers.
So Amazon will allow you an add to cart button. We haven't seen that as well. The idea is not, there's still that clicking the buttons, but just encouraging people to buy multiple products at the same time. Don't just buy one, check out. So yeah, Kit actually allows you to do that right now. You could build a kit and you could put all the different products, you know, from the different retailers, you know, and we'll put it all there. You can monetize from the affiliate programs you're supported, or, you know, Skimlinks or Vicklink, to cover Home Depot, since they're being jerks at the moment for you. but just, yeah, that idea that, you know, one button could work, but it may be that, you know, there's 10 products listed and someone only needs 6 or 7 of them.
Yeah.
You're still gonna have to push the 6 or 7 buttons where you put it all together. We've actually seen that, that single button doesn't convert quite as well as just making it easy to click the button, you know, for the 5 different products and, look at it, boom, add a cart, et cetera. So still a little bit of work, and a little bit of work isn't necessarily a bad thing, because it again builds that momentum, helps with those kind of micro conversions to help people, you know, feel comfortable moving through that last piece, the most important conversion of actually getting by and having the credit card get processed and, you know, the order confirmation email come through.
Is there a difference between providing maybe a 1 or 2 step, I guess, button click for a product? For example, you can maybe have a table at the top of an affiliate post and you go, you know, click here to see the vendors, and then a pop-up comes up with the different vendors versus just having the vendors on the page. Is that something that makes a difference?
Excellent question. I've seen them both ways, right? From our experience, and again, take this with a grain of salt because there's a million different ways you can slice it and dice it. Once you get someone excited about moving forward, minimizing the distractions is pretty important. So I'm honestly a bit of a fan of what you're saying of, you know, click to buy, you know, pulling up another screen, hopefully not necessarily another page. You know, sometimes that works well.
Yeah.
The choice pages, for example, but just like, even if it's like a light box, and, you know, blurring out the background. So it's okay. Well, here's the retailers, you know, here's the product you're looking for, et cetera, but just helping them move through that path, putting the buttons directly into the content. You need some white space because you can get distracted. Yeah, once you've built that intent, it also matters too. Like, where are they in that funnel, right? Are they still, you know, very high in that funnel, or are they getting pretty close to the bottom, right? If they're very high in the funnel, it's going to take a lot of work to fast forward them to the bottom of the funnel. If they're at the bottom of the funnel, it's pretty hard to distract them. They just want to move forward. So there's obviously, a lot of psychology, a lot of different kind of factors that kind of go into, you know, where are you at in this process?
What's your take on display ads things? You mentioned distractions. What's your take on that with display ads on affiliate posts?
You got to do what you got to do. We wrestled with this for quite some time about putting display ads on Kit. And display ads, we try to make them minimal and non-intrusive and you know, kind of match the content as well as possible. It's a nice to have an additional revenue stream. I don't love ads. I think ads, the pendulum swinging back a little bit where they're not so creepy. You know, we're seeing some value and some personalization. So a good ad is not a bad thing. Do I click on them personally very often? No, but I see them, and you know, do they impact my buying behavior? Maybe. So I'm not against them. You're right though that, you know, you don't want to make it so distracting that you're cutting away from your main goal, right? You know, if you get a 10th of a cent for an impression, but you know, your EPC is much higher for the affiliate, you know, back that math out, it may very well be worthwhile to get rid of all distractions. But if you're trying to find a balance, especially if you're in relatively early days, it's really good to diversify your revenue stream. What happens if, you know, Amazon cuts you out of the affiliate program because you did put an email or link in an email, which is against the terms and conditions. So diversification, having a backup, multiple revenue streams. I'm a big fan of that. And I don't think ads, they're not great, but they're not horrible either. Obviously, you know, find some balance when you have popovers over popovers and you know, and auto plays with sound. Just no. But yeah, a couple well placed ads are not a bad thing.
Yeah, I've finally been convinced because I've gone the no display ad route on all my sites.
Yeah,
for how long? And now just for one of my main sites, I'm going to put display ads, and I'm just waiting for the Google approval from Mediavine now.
Cool.
And I'm like, okay, I'll do it. I'll put it on, but I won't put it on affiliate posts for now. And then I'll just kind of see how it goes and see if it looks like shit or shit or not on as well, you know? So yeah, I'm not gonna pass up that extra revenue for now, at least on that site. And then we'll see how that goes.
So be careful as well. So when we first implemented ads, we did it through one of the main players. I'm not going to name names because I'm still pissed at him. And
okay, so we probably know who it is then.
What's that?
We probably know who it is then.
Some of the ads were they were the ad provider, but it would auction for a handful of different, you know, back-end ad systems. They did this so that we could optimize the revenue. You know, it's the classic, you know, real-time bidding, et cetera. But one of their providers was somehow getting infiltrated with these spam. So I would leave, you know, a kit page up in the background because I was doing some work, whatever, come back to it. And, you know, it rotates ads every 20 seconds, 30 seconds or whatever. And I come back and it's like a full page takeover that tells me that, you know, I need to click to upgrade because, you know, WTF, you know, something you're injecting, you know, JavaScript over the full page, you know, takeover for spam. So I guess, you know, to caveat my mention of ads aren't a bad thing until they are a bad thing, you know, definitely work with a reputable host. We squashed that problem relatively quickly, but yeah, just word of warning there. Jump into it blindly.
Yeah, a good warning there. Do you want to maybe also dive into, you mentioned some of the non-compliance things for the Amazon Associates program. Most mm-hmm. of us don't read huge terms and conditions pages of what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to. I think most people have a general idea, but do you want to maybe go into some of the most common, I guess, mistakes that people make in the program that get them kicked out?
Yeah, there's two. I'm going to pull up the chapter just so I can give you a little bit more than the two.
Perfect.
So first and foremost, I'm not a lawyer. This is not legal advice, blah, 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 blah. Second bit is that, yeah, Amazon's operating agreement is long and cumbersome, but that's not even the worst of it. They have a policies page that goes along with it. It's even longer and more cumbersome. Those are the rules on how to play the game. And if you don't know how to play the game, you're eventually going to lose. So as much as I'm going to give you a hack right now to get you through for now, I really strongly encourage those that are making some portion of their income from Amazon, and that portion's important, that they actually dedicate the couple hours or hour to read through that, because it is key that you understand it. Because if when you do break the rules, Amazon very rarely lets you back in, and they'll often claw back any of the unpaid revenue, which is often, you know, 2 or 3 months worth of revenue. So if you get kicked out and, you know, beginning right now and you lose all your holiday revenue, that really sucks. So please do take the time. Until then, let me give you a quick little hack. So first and foremost is just around cloaking links. If you are linking to Amazon through another tool, GeniusLink included, you need to disclose. It's totally fine to do that, but you just need to disclose the destination of that link. So if it, you'll often see like our YouTube clients, right? It'll be a GeniusLink. It'll have like Amazon in parentheses next to it, or right above it, you'll say like buy on Amazon, or you know, something just Amazon is in reference nearby that link. If you're using other tools or whatever, just it has to be pretty clear that the Amazon is going to be the end destination. With our choice pages, right, we take you into the choice page. The Amazon button is an Amazon logo, right? It doesn't get any more obvious than that. But yeah, blindly sending someone off is not something that they like. Amazon, of course, does a ton of research. As I understand it, this whole customer trust, shopper trust is really paramount for them. If you can start to build that trust from the very beginning, letting someone know that they're going to Amazon, from their research, as I understand it, you know, that's an indicator that conversion rate's going to be higher. So it makes sense, right? So don't cloak your links. Be transparent about where they're going. Just it's simple, but just do it. The second one that often gets people in trouble is this whole concept of offline links. Amazon is part of their compliance process. They want to know where those links are actually placed, right? When you sign up for Amazon, there's part of the sign-up process that asks you to list all the websites or all the places, your social media channels, et cetera, where you're going to be placing the links. They'll look at those, and they often look at them programmatically. So when they find sales are coming from someplace that you didn't list, you're in trouble. On top of that, there are certain things where they can't crawl it, look at it. One of those, and most important, is email. So Amazon affiliate links and email are a big no-no. You may see that Tim Ferriss or someone else has links in their email. Just because they do it doesn't mean you can do it. You know, either they haven't been caught yet or they've worked directly. Exactly. And, you know, we're all bound by our individual terms of service, right? Our own operating agreement. So don't put affiliate links in emails. Thankfully, a choice page is a stepping stone. So anyone that, you know, emails a key piece to them, the choice page works out really well because you're going, the link in the email is going to a landing page. Landing page is online. You can go forward from there. So that's a little bit of a workaround loophole, but yeah. Amazon's very aware of that. So those are the big ones. But PDFs is another one where, you know, people often, you know, here's your prepper checklist for a tornado. You know, here's the 10 things you need to buy from whatever. Those PDF is a place again where they don't get it offline. QR codes, ebooks, all places where a direct Amazon affiliate link are not recommended. Next one here is mentioning prices or availability that's not programmatic. So there's some awesome tools out there that can help with this. But yeah, if you put the price of a product, or, you know, it's in stock, whatever, and that's static text, and, you know, 6 months from now, that's wrong, that can get you in trouble. So anytime you're using prices or availability, or even another one further on is just using their star ratings reviews, those have to be programmatically driven. If something happens and something changes, mm-hmm. it has to be updated. So, you know, using one of the awesome plugins that ties in. Affiliate Table is probably my favorite at the moment. Those guys do some amazing stuff. But yeah, something to automate that. Or if you have engineering chops, just make sure you're using the PAPI, the product advertising API, to pull that through. The next one that's pretty important is not asking for a click or a bookmark on your link. You'll see this, unfortunately, all too often is, you know, this page is sponsored by Amazon, you know, or, you know, click my affiliate link before you go shopping. That doesn't fly. You know, you would, you know, think that your, you know, Amazon would like that you're referring, but those sales probably would have happened anyway. And by you injecting yourself beforehand, you're not really adding any value to the transaction. So why should Amazon, you know, reward you for those efforts? So YouTubers were pretty notorious about asking people to book link their affiliate link or, click the link below to support this, you know, this channel. And don't do that. Don't ask for the link. You know, you can educate and encourage, but don't ask for it. You know, learn more, yeah. blah, blah, blah. So a little bit of gray area there, but yeah, keep out of trouble. Next one is not linking to products. This is a little bit of a hack that's less common now, but you can add that tag equals that the affiliate parameters for an Amazon link to pretty much any Amazon link, and it'll pick up and set the cookie. So someone, the most classic case I've heard of, someone was linking to, wrote this great page, it ranked really well, on how to do returns for Amazon. And that the link to the form to submit for the return was an affiliate link. So he was getting all these halo commissions because people would click on the link to the return and they'll finish their shopping. So, you know, you link to products or to search results page, but don't link to help pages or to, you know, Amazon likes it when you link to the registry. That's legit. Don't, you know, so yeah, don't try to hack the system. Don't be sure to include an affiliate disclaimer, right? So there's two different levels of disclaimer here. FTC requires a disclaimer as well as Amazon Associates. So the FTC disclaimer needs to be at link level, at the top of the page. Amazon Associates only needs to be on the site once. But both those disclaimers, you know, letting people know that it is an affiliate link or that there is a commercial relationship or whatever it may be, are pretty important. And Amazon has, as I understand it, been on a growing amount of pressure from the FTC to police their program. Amazon's Associates program is 2 million people, 2 million publishers. So it is absolutely massive in the grander scheme of affiliate marketing. So it's no wonder that FTC keeps a pretty close eye on them. That's kind of the key ones. If you're doing a lot of social media, you know, it's important that you only put links in your channel. You know, don't kind of spread your affiliate links across different forums or in other people's comments. Make sure that when you post in public, you know, private groups again, because they need to look at it. You're not supposed to put links in paid ads, etc. But yeah, it's just really disclosure, you know, making sure that Amazon has an updated list of what's going on. And then just, you know, if you follow those rules, that should get you out of 95% of possible problems you can run into. But again, if you're going to play the game, read the rules. If Amazon affiliate revenue is important to you, if you're paying your mortgage or feeding your family based off of it, I really, really, really encourage you to spend the time to review the operating agreement. And, you know, just because you read it once doesn't mean that you shouldn't read it, you know, on a yearly basis or whatever it may be. They change it, unfortunately, relatively regularly. Usually it's small changes, but things do evolve.
Yeah. What's your opinion on, I guess, the future of the Amazon affiliate program? Obviously, we've seen rate cuts over and over and over. So what's your take on where it's heading?
Fascinating. I'm Yeah, I've got a whole business built on exactly answering that question. I have no crystal ball, so take this all again with a grain of salt. Amazon Associates works really well. It is a super easy program to get started with. It converts fairly well. There's now 22 different Amazon storefronts around the world. Two of those are private, have private affiliate programs, but 20 public affiliate programs. It's a good, clean program. It works well. But you bring up a great point. You know, we did a blog post. I guess it's been a couple of years now, but over the last 10 years, that commission rate on average has dropped pretty significantly. I think it's dropped by 3x if I remember the blog article correctly. We're also seeing, you know, these rules around qualified versus non-qualified purchases, the thing we're talking about in Europe, where if you send directly to the product details page, you get a higher commission, versus if you send to a search results page, you get a much lower commission. That's kind of changing some of the math. That doesn't happen here in the US, but if you dig deeper in the reports, you'll see where it's a qualified versus non-qualified purchase, and it implies that maybe it's not too far away. So where's Amazon Affiliates program, the Amazon Associates, their affiliate program going? I don't think it's going anywhere in the short term. It's a key piece. I think it's a lot of value comes from that. But Amazon Affiliate, Amazon Associates is now actually kind of three different programs, right? There's the offsite, which is what we're all familiar with. That's a traditional affiliate program. There's this whole concept of onsite where your reviews or your videos can actually start showing up on the Amazon site. Spencer Hawes and Niche Pursuits is you know, writing about that recently. And there's this whole influencer program as well, which is really geared towards, again, kind of the creators, influencers. So between the three of those, it seems that the on-site program, we've heard some challenges with that, where it was typically only open to the biggest publishers and commissions have kind of gone all over the board, and it's not operating as well as it has in the past. The off-site seems to be working well, right? Commission rates are going down. Then this influencer piece, it seems to be exploding. So I wouldn't be surprised if the influencer piece and the off-site stuff merged at some point, just kind of cleaned it up. But I think Associates in general is here to stay. That being said, the thing that I'm also getting more and more excited about is this whole concept. So Amazon's affiliate program, aka Associates, is under the retail side of things. On the other side of things, you know, Amazon has AWS and this ads product, right? So under ads, there's this program called Attribution. So the Attribution program is kind of the exact opposite of Associates, where Associates pays you commissions for referrals and kind of gives you crap for data. Attribution is the exact opposite, where it gives you amazing data, but doesn't pay out any commissions. Attribution was built for all the different brands and people that sell on Amazon to be able to understand their offsite marketing efforts. But this phenomenon's happened over this last year or so, where some really smart companies and tools and people have started taking Amazon's attribution, and it's essentially just an API. You add a couple more parameters to the link, et cetera. But they're using that as kind of the technology layer and building an Amazon affiliate program outside of Amazon. So Refersion was the one that really kind of started to make some serious noise about this. Unfortunately, they've had some challenges. It seems like they're no longer pushing this program ahead like they were before. There's another company here in Seattle that I'm super excited about. And full disclosure, we actually wrote a check and invested in them recently called Levanta that's building a platform. But I think that's kind of a really fascinating aspect where, yeah, Associates is here and covers, you know, 350 million different products, but these attribution platforms or companies that sit on top of the attribution platform can really open it up because they can pay much higher commissions because the brand is already, you know, willing to pay, you know, 10%, where Amazon's only willing to pay like 2 or 3%. There are some nuances there, but I don't want to bet on one or the other. I'm betting on both. I think at some point in the future, a skilled affiliate marketer will leverage both. They'll have a relationship with the brand and they're going to get an extra bonus for selling, you know, whatever, but they're also going to use the affiliate program for all those halo commissions, etc. So it's exciting days. Associates is over 20 years old and, you know, the dashboard hasn't evolved a ton, but behind the scenes there's a lot of exciting things I think happening. I'm pretty fired up. So again, one reason why I'm not eager to leave my position is I get to watch this industry continue to evolve and unfold, and yeah, some very pretty exciting things are happening.
Before we finish this podcast, then I want to continue down the future of affiliate marketing. And recently, I mean, this by the time this comes out, this news will be a few weeks old. But obviously, with Bard and Google AI, and then things ChatGPT AI, what's your take on how that will affect the affiliate marketing industry?
such a fascinating question. And I think, you know, Doug is way more, you know, the person to answer that. I don't know. We are fortunate enough to support clients in all different styles, right? We work with some of the largest publishers, you know, some very premium publishers. We work with some people that are just getting started. We work with musicians, we work with authors, but we also are doing a lot in the creator / YouTube space. I don't have numbers available to back this up, but I think that written content has been more and more challenging, you know, to kind of nail and own a space and, you know, end up in the Google SERPs. I foresee that the explosion of AI just making it even more challenging for, unfortunately, people, you know, similar to yourself and your audience, with content driven affiliate marketing. Not saying it's over, it's just, it's harder. It's evolved. But you're getting tools to help you with that as well. I think there is some danger, you know, maybe Bing will become, you know, will displace Google. But as again, I'm not an SEO expert by any means, but from my understanding, you know, Google doesn't like, you know, completely, you know, AI generated content. So how that balances out, who knows? You know, video seems to be a very interesting piece. You know, Google also rolled out a thing about having multiple retailers showing pictures of you actually with the product, et cetera. So there are, I think, certain aspects that AI can't yet replace. So maybe you have AI write the content, but you go, you know, film some videos and shoot some pictures with you and the product. That might be the perfect middle ground. I don't know, but just, yeah, hey, ChatGPT, write me 10 articles about XYZ using, you know, these keywords. I don't think that's going to fly. So we will see. Sorry, I don't have a more succinct answer for you, but it's fascinating. That's good.
But yeah, I agree with you. Obviously, I mean, my experience so far with ChatGPT, it's the content that I get back from it is basically 2 cents a word writer level from what I've seen. So, I mean, that's the one issue with AI, which obviously needs to be heavily edited. But yeah, I'm with you. The video stuff, I think, is going to be even more important now for people with niche websites because, yeah, I mean, you can fake your video stuff using AI things, but building that personal relationship with someone, having that trust on whatever it is with the products, it's a huge difference. I mean, my conversion stuff have gone nuts recently since starting to do more video.
Awesome.
And that's been huge. So I'm starting to go into it hardcore as well, just to diversify a bit.
It's so damn easy to make video now, right? You know, your phone shoots really high quality video.
Exactly. Exactly. There's no excuse anymore. So we can't just spam the service. But I think that's pretty much covered everything here, Jesse. Do you want to maybe let the audience know where they can kind of find and follow you and see what you're up to?
Absolutely. So I've been slowly trying to wean myself off social media, but I still have a bit of a Twitter addiction. So yeah, at GeniusLink or at Jesse Lakes is where you find me on Twitter. But LinkedIn is really kind of the rabbit hole that I've gone down. Yeah, love it or hate it, LinkedIn is probably the best spot. But honestly, if you have anyone that's listening that wants to dive in the weeds, just send me an email, just jl@geni.us. Can't guarantee I'll answer it immediately. My inbox is a bit of a mess, but I love to have these conversations. It's exciting. Happy to help however I can.
Perfect, and we'll link everything up in the description too. But thanks for coming on, JC. I appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.